Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news-ad-free. That's amazon.com/news-ad-free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
UK Tech Weekly Podcast.
The only thing more exciting than an early German World Cup exit is the UK Tech Weekly Podcast, obviously. We are here in the midst of football fun and Scott tells me Love Island banter.
It's the summer of love.
Someone's out. I won't give you any spoilers. Obviously, if you listen to this, you do not watch Love Island. thank you for joining us. I'm Henry Barrow. I've got Scott Carey, got Sean Bradley. We've got a triptych of tech bands to come your way. We are going to start in the capital, sorry if you live in the countryside and you don't get to use Uber.
Yeah.
But in London, Scott, you might not be able to soon either.
I was in Hull over the weekend and I was horrified to find that I couldn't get an Uber.
So, yeah, it really is a first world problem when you load up that app and you're like, what do you mean?
It is. So in a nutshell, if you have been living under a rock, the TfL, Transport for London, basically stripped Uber of its license back in September of last year. How time flies. Citing public security and safety fears because they weren't really background checking their drivers and they weren't really reporting any crime that was happening in their vehicles and various other issues with the way they were operating themselves. It was a really shocking decision at the time. No one really saw it coming. People knew that TfL weren't particularly happy with Uber, but they really didn't think they were just going to strip them of their license.
And that kind of broke the wave of the excitement about the new CEO, right? Because it was all happy clappy when he came in and then they were like, actually, you can't. Maybe can't work in London anymore.
Yeah, it was a very early fire. For what it's worth, London is Uber's biggest European market. Mm-hmm. I think it's sort of 3.6 million customers. It's a big market that they were obviously very keen to protect.
And not to forget, 40,000 employees. Well, sorry, drivers.
Yes.
Yeah. They didn't. Yeah. That's another story.
So since then, Uber has been on a very much a two-pronged drive. One is with TfL to basically prove that they were going to play by the rules.
Yep.
They basically had a long list of requirements given to them regarding their operating model. And over the last sort of 6 months or so, they've been working to slowly start ticking all of those off in terms of how it checks its drivers and bits and bobs like that to try and alleviate those safety concerns. On the other side, there's also been a very concerted PR effort going on with Uber in general, but also in London. Under the new CEO, Dara Khosrowshahi's leadership. Also, if you were living under a rock, Uber had developed a very negative reputation over the last couple of years for the way it operated under its founder.
Travis
Kalanick.
But so, would it be fair to say, though, that the troubles that it was having in a corporate sense were perhaps not known really by the general public who use it in London?
Yeah, not particularly. I mean, they basically developed a piece of software called Grable, which helped them avoid regulators, which obviously regulators didn't love, which obviously played into TfL's sort of negative outlook on the company as a whole. There was a huge diversity scandal led by Susan Fowler, who wrote a sort of scandalous blog post at the time about sort of rampant sexism and misogyny at the company.
More of what I meant was that perhaps we as tech journalists weren't too surprised that about the London news, even though it was big news. But like paying customers would have been like, well, where's this come from?
Exactly.
Yeah.
The thing is, even though they were stripped of their license, Uber was never stopped from operating. So anyone that uses Uber will know that there was no point ever where they opened the app and they were told that they weren't being able to use it. This was because They basically, Uber appealed the decision immediately, which meant they could still operate while it was under appeal. That appeal process has gone on until yesterday, when the court finally decided on that decision. And shock horror, Uber won. They were granted a probationary 15-month license to keep operating. It's probationary because TfL have set a load of rules and regulations that they want Uber to abide by. They've agreed to a full audit. They're going to pay sort of basically a fine of 400 grand to TfL for running this, basically in legal fees.
Okay.
But yeah, they're going to be kind of closely watched for those 15 months to make sure that they are running as a fit and proper ride-hailing transport company.
And so at the end of 15 months, they could still lose a license?
They could, if they were to not operate in a way that is TfL's satisfaction.
Probably won't.
That
happen.
Is never going to happen. No. Right. Not under Khosrowshahi's watch. He very much is keen to play by the rules here. The fact that they've gone to all this effort to get to this point means that they will probably uphold those standards going forward. Interestingly, they actually applied for a 5-year license, then an 18-month license, and then that's been brought down to a 15-month probationary. So they definitely haven't got things all their way. Just to pat myself on the back, at the time that they
please go ahead.
which I want to do, at the time that they were stripped of their license, I was very, very bullish on the fact that with their legal power and their new CEO and their new outlet, they were 100% going to win this appeal. And they have.
Well played.
Thanks.
London will not feel like Hull
to
you anymore.
No risk of that.
Putting you on the spot a bit now.
Go on.
Uber operates in London, obviously, to a very high success. How come there are so many European capitals which do not use Uber? For instance, Berlin, you can still use the app, but you can only call a regular taxi, and it's you can't even use it in Budapest.
Yeah.
Why is there not a social,
someone
moral...
Someone has been on a holiday to Budapest recently.
Maybe I have. Taxify is actually quite a good app.
Yeah,
anyway,
it is good.
Why is it that we don't seem to have any sort of social or moral problem against just using Ubers? Because in Berlin in particular, it was not used just because socially they were like, no, we don't want you to come in here and take over this entire business.
Yeah, so they have a very, very viable local alternative. And I think there's a certain amount of patriotism there. So MyTaxi is a German ride-hailing company.
So why don't we care about our cabbies?
Well,
is it just because they're expensive?
Yeah, it's because they're expensive, and it's because they offer a worse service, or they've traditionally offered a worse service. I know, personally speaking, when Uber turned up, before I was a tech journalist and before I knew anything about how the company was run, it was just such a wildly better service than I was used to getting.
Yeah.
And then I think that's how it kind of ingratiated itself with the public in London in particular. People were kind of wooed by this new way of getting about and not having to worry about having cash and not having to worry about going south of the river after 10 or whatever.
I was about to say the whole south of the river thing. That's where people live.
So, and I think that sort of plays into the fact that people like Matt Hancock, who is the Secretary for Digital Media and Sport, he kind of tweeted out that this was sense prevailing. And I think that really mimics a lot of people sort of in the Tory government or who support the Tories, thinking basically that this is a win for a very useful service rather than a win for their drivers who still aren't considered employees, and still this is not a decision that's gone down well with the black cab community.
No.
Because it's yet another threat to their existence.
Do you think that any other businesses that run on that kind of business model, like food delivery services, how come they're not held to account in that way? Is it because they are working above board?
No, so they are. So there are. I'm not very clued up on this, but my colleague Tamlin McGee has written about this on Tech World quite extensively. Basically, Deliveroo in particular are currently going through a big unionization effort. There's a lot of conflict over the way that they are classified as employees.
Yeah.
It's also very, very much worth saying that even though Uber won this decision, which very much hinged on their ability to play by the rules in terms of safety and reporting of crime and things like that, they actually have another date in court coming up on October 30th. And that is regarding the way it classifies its drivers as employees.
Okay.
And that hinges on paying them benefits, overtime, paid holiday. And that basically is a completely separate issue, but also very, very important to their future existence in this market.
And do you think, maybe just to round off, that why, aside from that it wants to make more money, why will Uber why has it been so against paying them as though they were employees?
Uber for me is capitalism distilled down to its purest form. It is that yeah. that is yeah. the way it was designed by Kalanick and his sort of tech bro colleagues at the time. It very much was, how can we create a service that is as convenient as possible for the people that use it, but also make sure that we don't have to pay all of the stuff that we used to when it comes to drivers. So the whole cliche around Uber not owning any cars very much holds true in that sense, because yeah. They also had no staff and no drivers. I honestly think that's just the way the business model has been designed. It has been so that they don't have any sort of liability over paying their drivers the sort of things that you would have to pay a proper employee.
But it's grown large enough now that it's going to have to do it.
Yeah, I mean, funnily enough, like, I've read plenty of pieces on both sides of this, but there are plenty of Uber drivers that really say, okay, yeah, we would love, you know, our benefits, and we would like to be treated like proper employees, but the worst case for us is for Uber to be taken away, because that takes away a very important stream of income for me. So it's definitely not ideal, but I think that there needs to be a compromise more than a one side or the other.
I suppose that's slightly worrying, because then it's a potential get out, isn't it, for Dara, I can't pronounce his surname.
Yeah.
Because if he's come in, he's shown willing to try and reform it in London. He said, oh, we're going to give you benefits. But then if it turns out that majority of drivers go, oh, well, we'd rather that we were still employed, oh, don't worry about that holiday.
Yeah.
That actually they're going to be able to continue doing what they're doing.
Yeah.
Yeah, they've got them over a barrel. They've
absolutely got them over a barrel.
That's where the lawmakers and the regulators come in, yeah. I think. They have to kind of take the side of the people that don't have the power in this position or the leverage, which is the drivers, and you kind of have to force someone like Uber's hand in that respect. So, yeah, keep your eyes sort of peeled on that October 30th decision.
God, what do you think?
It's intense. It's very intense. I mean, yeah. I mean, it really just rings true. I mean, it was just so much more convenient when it actually came into the market over using a cab, as we said, you know. So, I mean, hopefully they get it all figured out, because while I feel for the people working there, you know, on the very sort of strange sort of working conditions, sort of being sort of freelancer-esque and
yeah,
being very, you know, ill-defined, I guess. Yeah, it's just such a great service that it's just going to, if it goes away, there'd be a real gap, right? So
interesting stuff.
To flip it back on you two, because I sort of follow this quite closely, but I'd be interested to know how sort of cynical you two are. Like, do you feel like Khosrow Shahi, since he's come in, is actually making an effort to reform Uber and make it a better company and a more sort of morally acceptable service? Or do you think it's just a ploy to get his license back?
As I alluded to just then, it seems to me like that will be what happens. I've not seen anything that's actually customer, like man on the street facing, that makes Uber look any better. I think it's cozied up to TfL and Sadiq and the tech press, but it hasn't done anything to the actual end user at all. No. I would say I only know this because I keep a sort of a close eye on what you're doing, and occasionally BBC News will be like, oh, Uber is in a bit of trouble, and then it fades away. I don't think there's been nothing to the service that I would be surprised if half the people in London knew that even this was going on.
Yeah,
it's also got far more expensive. I don't know if you've noticed, but it's...
Surge pricing is also up, but you mean in general the base price?
It's just more expensive in general, and also you don't get informed of surging anymore, so you just get shown the price. And if
yes, that is true. Yeah.
So if that's a journey that you do regularly, you'll be aware that you're being surged, because you'll be like, why is that £10 more than normal? But if you're doing a journey
they've taken away the do accept the surcharge screen.
Yeah. So I was doing a journey from Gatwick Airport to my mum's house, which is near Gatwick, the other day. And I know that a local taxi will charge me £8 flat for that, but I got an Uber instead, and I ended up paying sort of £16, which is double. So I was probably being surged, but also it's now to the point where it's not cheaper than a local taxi, which is always its old selling point. So
yeah,
it's way more convenient though, because I didn't have any cash, which is why I got an Uber and I paid for it.
I suppose, yeah. Most cabs have a card machine now, though.
Yeah,
not local taxis.
Yeah. True,
yeah.
True.
Yeah.
Right, well, keep an eye on it if you weren't aware. It could be interesting. And if you don't have Uber, sorry for wasting 13 minutes of your life. We will be right back, because something you do use is Facebook. Sean.
Crypto and Facebook. Here we go.
Right. So Facebook, good. Money, good. Why the two bad?
Why the two bad? Well, so here we go. So in January, Facebook banned the advertising of cryptocurrency on their site.
So the use of it as a currency or to invest in it? Like what was the advertising?
Investing in it, and I believe blanket any cryptocurrency.
Any at all? Okay, right.
Yeah. So they brought in a new policy that was going to prohibit ads that are frequently associated with misleading or deceptive practices.
So that was just blanket crypto is deceptive.
Pretty much, and this all came because of the huge bubble that grew sort of over the change of the year, and the oncome of ICOs. Which is an initial coin offering, not unlike an IPO. So for anyone who doesn't know, when a company goes public and puts out a load of stock, it will hold an IPO to move a load of its shares. Crypto was doing something similar where a new coin would launch, and then it would depend on the coin, but it would either be a selection of private investors, or they would release it completely to the public, would be able to buy up an amount of the coin at a reduced cost, and you'd usually have to sign up or somehow be in the know to get this
right.
And there would also be incentives, so you know, the more you would buy, the less it would cost, sort of periodically.
Often these would be sort of pumped and dumped as well.
Yes.
So
idea what that means.
Yeah. So yes. They would heavily market that coin and probably pay for a load of Twitter bots to talk about it on social media, so that a lot of sort of schmucks in the public see this new ICO, think it's going to get them rich quick, and then they buy it, and then all the people that the institutional investors wait till the stock price has gone up because all these schmucks are bought in, and then sell theirs at a higher price.
Yeah, or even because the market is unregulated, even more insidiously, without even marketing it, they would just drive up the supply-demand ratio. They just buy it all up, inflate the price, and then they'd all just drop it instantly. And this would be organized.
Yeah, they'd all be in cahoots.
Orchestrated, and you're just trying to catch out people who aren't in the know and make money off of them. And this is not this is essentially what an unregulated market looks like. And if you don't know what you're doing, it can be very intimidating, because the stock market is intimidating anyway if you're getting into it. And that has a lot of red tape and laws around it to make sure that no one is deliberately trying to screw you. Mm-hmm. Whereas here, there are people actively trying to screw you that were being advertised on Facebook.
Yeah.
And you could, you know, be in a position where you could be in trouble. Having said all that, Facebook have now reversed this ban. To be clear, ICOs are still happening, and a lot of them are still quote unquote exit scamming. So this is the other side of an ICO. Some are pump and dump, where they shove the price. I know it's a great term. It's where they shove the price up, sell it all, and the price comes crashing back down. And then people aren't in there and left with the bags. That is sort of maybe not quite as bad as someone essentially writing an idea for a crypto project, basically on a napkin, getting it marketed. Having the price just completely inflated and just disappearing with all the money that people have spent on the given for the coin.
Yeah.
Because that's not, manipulating the market because it's unregulated to drive the price up and down is one thing, but literally just taking all the money someone's given you for your idea and buying an island somewhere, is crazy.
Okay, so I get that, but how were people actually advertised to on Facebook? Because as you say, it's a very confusing process. People wouldn't exactly know on their own how to invest in something like that. So were these adverts click through to simplify just literally giving money to something? Like how are the people actually getting caught out if this is such a confusing situation?
That's essentially it. You would be able to, there are sort of, when a project would start up, you would be able to go onto their website and give them money. In exchange, you would receive their coin. Mm-hmm. Depending on what coin it was, you could then store it in a wallet and all sorts of other stuff. But it really was largely just as simple as that.
Because I mean, like, I get served ads for trainers. And yes. I understand if I give money, I get trainer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It just kind of boggles that it's catching out people who don't know enough about it, but will still put lots of money into it.
Yeah, no, the core difference here, Henry, is that you're not an idiot.
I'm flat as God.
Yeah, I guess also, these ICOs would have been displayed to people who perhaps, and obviously with the scandal that Facebook was involved in recently, they could have Google searched get what money. Is Bitcoin, or yeah, or like how do I make money quick or whatever,
free gold.
And then suddenly ICOs start popping up on the sidebar.
That makes more sense.
So I mean, yeah. So I'll say this non-cynically, in an attempt to protect Facebook's users, Facebook got rid of these and they've brought them back.
Okay, have they said why?
No.
I'm sure it's a completely legitimate reason for legitimate reasons that is only going to help their users.
Yeah, probably. I think someone probably got handed a calculator with some maths on it and saw all the ad revenue they're missing out on.
If you put this back, then you get more.
Yeah, this number goes up. And it, also, the ban was reversed immediately is the other thing. So it wasn't like, oh, we're going to change this in a month. It was, oh, by the way, it's been reversed.
So then the real, so maybe the question is here, then why did they take it away in the first place? Just look morally, well, moral high ground.
So here we go. So if we dive
Facebook in... Facebook always takes the moral high
ground.
They reverse the decision.
Is that as well.
And also, that's true.
Yeah, if we dive deeper into this, there have been rumours swirling that Facebook itself is looking to get into crypto. Oh. So they've put together, I'm going to call it a crypto task force because... I mean, come on, why wouldn't you? Which is being headed up by, let me just double check my notes. The guy that used to be the head of Messenger, who's David Marcus. Who's leading up. The team's quite small, but it does also include Instagram's VP of engineering, which is James Everingham, and the VP of product, which is Kevin Well. And I think the team is about a dozen strong so far, and they're looking specifically at blockchain and how they can help and how Facebook can utilize that. So
Facebook or Facebook users?
One then the other.
Okay.
So it's really... Blockchain is so... Without going on an evangelical blockchain.
I'm not going to be able to ask you any questions because I don't understand it.
Cool.
so Scott, maybe help me out.
Yeah, I've got an ICO for you. I think it's so blockchain is so wide ranging that it could be used for a number of things. I mean, anything from if you buy some Facebook coin, then you won't see ads on Facebook anymore. I mean, do you know what I mean? So it's almost like having a like an inbuilt currency that you can get additional features on Facebook if you spend X amount of Facebook coin a month, and you will get.
And they're seriously thinking you think of doing it that way rather than introducing like a paid tier service. Instead, you have to like buy Facebook credits.
Well, so this is it. So it depends what exactly they end up wanting to use it for. I mean, it's all very. I mean, they're putting some serious people and some serious money into researching this. I think. Zuckerberg said himself that he's, you know, excited at the prospect of what blockchain could do. And, you know, Facebook...
It's just a load of nerds loving nerd stuff, isn't it?
It is. And I am one of those nerds. But yes. So, I mean, yeah. We also had sort of Mr. Wozniak from Apple has been saying that, you know, the recent bubble looks a lot like the dot-com bubble, which... right now crypto has dropped to Bitcoin sort of $5,500 when it was 19 just before Christmas. So we're in what is known as a bear market where everyone is just freaking out and selling. And if you frequent any sort of places that talk about crypto like I do, the mood is tense, to say the least. People are not happy with the way the market's going currently at all.
That's what happens when you make money up.
Out of nothing. Pretty much.
Facebook has been known to kind of do these pie in the sky kind of ideas. They literally just shuttered their internet drone division, which was going to deliver internet via drones.
They did close that.
Yeah, they shut that down. So I wouldn't be surprised if this is a kind of an experiment that they might, you know, in a year shut down. And by the sounds of the people that they've got involved, who are very sort of senior people at Facebook, they've probably said, we really, really want to try and do something with blockchain and crypto. What can we do? Just maybe just as an engineering exercise, maybe just to see how it goes. Mm-hmm. And as long as they don't brazenly profit off of it or screw anyone over, then I don't really see a problem with it.
No, I mean, so Amazon is sort of the kings of doing this sort of thing, right? I mean, they sort of dip their fingers in every pie they can find in terms of let's try and get involved in as many segments of the market, from everything from buying up, you know, grocery stores to getting into game development or
they're doing healthcare
production.
Now.
Health, right, exactly. So, I mean, and Amazon have been very good at making this work, where they jump into a new sector and fix what look like, I guess, obvious problems, but I guess aren't that obvious if they exist. So yeah, it'd be interesting to see where this goes. It is in for the crypto space as a whole, it could be very interesting if something actually comes out of this, because it's the main issue with crypto is it's difficult to penetrate for the man on the street.
Yeah.
The other big rumor as well is that Facebook have been rumored to that they're going to be purchasing Coinbase. So Coinbase is...
This is interesting.
Yeah, Coinbase is the biggest exchange in the world. In the past financial year, they made over $1 billion in revenue.
Mm-hmm.
So, and again, to explain to anyone what Coinbase is, I mean, just like when you go to the Bureau de Change and get an exchange pounds for euros, you log onto Coinbase, you make an account, you send the money, and then you get crypto back.
Yeah.
And then you hold, you know, Bitcoin or whatever you've bought.
And does that service simplify what is a confusing process?
The reason why Coinbase has made so much money is because the UI is clean, it's slick, and it really is easy just to buy.
Is there an app?
There is.
Amazing.
There certainly is. So
they just take fat commission off people.
It's pretty, the commission's quite aggressive. I think knowing this personally, I think that I believe it's sort of 7-ish% if you're using a debit or credit card. If you do the direct bank transfer, it's 1%.
Okay,
but it's better to pay 1% to get something for nothing than to just hold on to nothing, isn't it? So
deep,
you're in there. Yeah,
but also true, and something that Facebook you think would buy and just own as an asset.
Well, I mean that if they, I mean this is why. I mean you're sort of. I mean. There's an argument that I'm connecting dots that aren't there, but if they're putting all these senior people into looking into crypto and they're looking at buying Coinbase, I mean, this is all still rumor, but this could come together in a pretty big way. And again, Coinbase has made it as easy as possible to buy crypto, and so Facebook partnering with that, also the fact that there's 2 billion users.
Yeah,
right. So I mean, you know, that's terrifying. So. Yeah, interesting.
I do find it interesting that Facebook are predicating this on the fact that they have a trusted brand, even though they are currently in the doldrums in terms of trust.
Yeah.
But then maybe like the being aware of Uber's troubles, does everyone in the world really know that Facebook are that morally unjust at the moment?
Good point.
So many people that I know would just use Facebook all the time, and I just don't think they ever read tech news.
No.
So...
That's scary. It's like
Facebook is the internet for a lot of people, isn't it?
Well, yeah, in the Philippines.
Yeah. Where it literally is, yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe I'm being just cynical or closed-minded, but maybe also people have no idea.
No, I think you're right. I mean, and also, I mean, it's not, you know, it's hard to find out about this stuff if you're not already looking for it. And because, I mean, Facebook is going to be doing the hardest to hide it as well from the average user. But yeah, the ramifications for what could happen are kind of nuts. But
Well... I've learned something. Thank you. I won't click on any coins when I'm on Facebook. I don't really use Facebook much anymore.
No.
Maybe I don't think I've never seen a coin advert on it, but obviously have you actually seen one?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I suppose it.
Sean's right in that demo.
I'm well in there. Yeah.
Cool. Thank you. We will follow up on that, see where that goes. I'm going to get my own back on you two now by lecturing you about phones.
Yeah, I'm just going to go off and buy 10,000 Facebook coins.
Facecoin. Zucker coins.
We'll be right back to talk about the new phone you didn't know existed.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Did you two ever own a BlackBerry in the 2000s?
No. I'm not a lawyer or a member of Obama's political team.
Right. Little potted history for you here. Basically, there's a new one. Bet you didn't know.
No way. No.
Yeah. That's what it looks like.
Didn't BlackBerry nearly go bankrupt?
There you go. I'll let you have a look at it.
I wonder why.
So this is slightly confusing, but bear with me. So BlackBerry...
Have I gone back in time?
Maybe.
Okay.
It could have been what happened. BlackBerry, the company, the Canadian company, made its last phone 2015?
Oh, I remember this, yeah.
And then they pulled out the hardware game. Chinese manufacturer called TCL, which has licensed the BlackBerry brand, now actually makes the phone that you hold, which is called the BlackBerry Key 2. Clever bit of branding, because last year's was called the Key 1. And so what this is a phone with a physical keyboard in 2018 that runs full Android Oreo. It's got, completely full Android. Did you know this had come out before I handed it to you?
Absolutely.
No.
I thought, I thought BlackBerry no longer existed.
Yeah, I saw it being handed around the office the other day and I was like, oh, look at that retro phone someone bought. And then,
this is brand new. So what I wanted to have a little quick chat with you about was not only phones that like this that are trying to bring back features that we thought we were over, but also I've got a couple of other phones here to show you that are adding features that people, that are just innovations that maybe we don't even need, and that probably a bit like how I have no idea about crypto, how people have no idea.
Sean's just been pressing some buttons and none of them did what he wanted them to do.
I'm on your Slack.
Yeah, so this is a confusing phone. It has a physical keyboard.
I think you buried the lead here. It has a physical keyboard.
And how nuts is that?
As
I will now demonstrate to them, you can also use it as a trackpad. I'm on Twitter, I can then scroll using the touch-sensitive keys.
Oh, why?
So it's interesting to see your reaction here. So obviously most people, in fact, all people, type on glass way faster than they type on this.
Yeah, and my best friend still has a BlackBerry and he swears that he can type on it better.
So he's got like a proper, it runs BlackBerry software.
Yeah. Savage.
Wow. Yeah. That's going to be an old phone.
I know, it's well old.
So BlackBerry Mobile is now a branded, it's very confusing. TCL made the phone,
yeah,
but BlackBerry Mobile is still a different company to BlackBerry.
Okay.
BlackBerry is an enterprise software company now,
of course.
And it does actually have a hand in the secure software on this phone, but then BlackBerry Mobile say, and they gave us briefings on this phone about how like the busy professional has no time. And so the main innovation of this phone, right, so you can, oh my god, I said innovation, if I want to go on Twitter, I can program the T key, so when I press it, it goes to Twitter.
Is that when I hit S, they went to your Slack?
There you go. Yeah.
Oh, and so like,
but if you hold this key down, which they called the speed key, I can then hop over to like Instagram or like Facebook. That is the main feature of that phone, that you can hop between apps without going to the home screen.
Brilliant.
Cool.
And I just wanted to kind of, because obviously I go to these events and I get these phones, and loads of other nerds go as well, and they love it. And this has got lukewarm reviews. I gave this 7 out of 10, because if you do want a physical keyboard on your phone, like if your mate needs an upgrade, Scott, this is literally the only phone you should buy.
Right.
Okay.
But why
why
I'm still thinking why, because last year they did one and I was sort of, it was almost like the novelty there made me give it a better score. I was like, this is cool, like I remember BlackBerry.
I genuinely think it's for that niche audience that I just mentioned, sorry mate, to my mate, that genuinely still would rather have a physical keyboard because they genuinely think they can work better on a physical keyboard if they're literally firing off emails all day.
So this is the other thing they were plugging, right? So it might be, and like you say, it might be, does your friend work in finance?
Yeah, he does, yeah.
Okay, there you go. Because that is that a work-issued phone?
Yeah.
So is it a bank?
Yeah.
There you go. So they still have like an IT system where the guys will just be like, just give you a BlackBerry because exactly. It's really secure. Most companies have now worked out how to have such security using iOS.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And eventually I would think that he would probably be given one.
Yeah, they will have to clasp that phone out of his cold dead fingers.
Yeah. yeah, because my dad had one for years and now he's got an iPhone now. And like it just doesn't seem to be a problem. But the funny thing is I don't think this particular BlackBerry will ever get into his hands because like... a secure Android phone is kind of a paradox.
Yeah.
And they do some things in the software. So you get regular security updates. I won't get into explaining what a hardware root of trust is, but this phone has one.
Good.
It sets that up. And also you just get more user-facing software features that tell you, oh, you maybe should do a PIN code rather than a PIN pattern because that's more secure and things like that. But then this is one side. This is like the nostalgia phone, a bit how, and again, Nokia is an example of this. The Nokia phones that are coming out now aren't made by Nokia.
No.
They're licensed by another Finnish company.
Did Microsoft shutter?
Name escapes me. Yeah, they bought it, ruined it, and then sold it.
They bought it for loads of money.
Loads of money, yeah. Yeah, Microsoft, yeah, what they did. They could have done well with that.
Yeah.
But yeah, it doesn't make for its phones anymore. It's completely separate. But then I wanted to show you just quickly two more phones and kind of thinking, because there's that side of the market, like Nokia and BlackBerry, where people are playing on nostalgia, trying to like sell you phones that you really don't probably want. And then, so this is another phone reviewed recently. This is the latest HTC phone called the HTC U12 Plus.
Okay.
The buttons on one of the main things about this phone, right? The buttons on the side aren't buttons. So try and press them and tell me, what do you reckon?
Yeah, that's not a button.
Isn't it really weird?
Yeah.
So basically, they made a really great phone last year with a great camera, good screen. It got some decent reviews, including from us. But now this year, because again, there's also a phone whose sides you can squeeze to like perform functions.
Oh, I love it.
But look at that. So those buttons are not mechanical. They're just pressure sensitive. But
I like the click.
It's okay. But a bit like how they kind of...
It's god-awful.
There you go. That's what I wanted. Because it is god-awful.
Yeah.
It completely ruins the phone. Like, it's a great phone, but... it's completely ruined by those buttons. They're overly sensitive. You just like pick it up and your finger brushes that power button on the side and locks the phone. And you're like,
it's got Face ID.
And it does have a version of a less secure version of Apple's Face ID. So that they've added fake buttons to this phone, which completely ruined the phone because you can't even turn the volume down. You can't press the button twice. Sometimes it just doesn't. Like if it was in my pocket, the buttons just don't work when I'm trying to like turn the volume down.
Yet. You gave it 7 out of 10.
I gave this... Oh, no, that was the BlackBerry.
Oh, sorry.
I gave this 5.
Okay.
Well, fair.
And then another one, I just wanted, again, I mean, the listeners probably bought out their mind, but another thing
that... You underestimate our audience.
Motorola do, and again, I've picked 3 here. What great examples.
Yeah.
It's also owned by Lenovo. Motorola does exist as a company still, but it's owned by Lenovo.
Brilliant.
And what they've done, this is a phone from last year called the Z2 Play. But so the back of that is a modular design.
I see.
And so I don't actually have any of the mods, but I do have the case here, which you can magnetize to the back. So they've gone out for like a whole line of phones. That's not the only one. There are more high-end ones, and there's another one coming out. Where would you be interested in this? If you don't want a physical keyboard and you don't want fake buttons, would you ever buy an Android phone where you can buy an ecosystem of mods?
No, so I tell you what, I wouldn't. Because I'm not
we won't get into that.
I wouldn't, but I do have some friends that have modular phones, and
really?
I was sat in the pub with them about a year ago, and they were both sat there with their modular phones, and they talked honestly nonstop for about 40 minutes about their mods. They loved it.
Were they Motorola phones?
I can't remember
because there aren't many that do it. So basically, the shape on the back of that phone. This is the other thing they backed themselves into a corner with. The first phone came out like 2 years ago.
Yeah.
But they have to keep the back of the phone the same dimensions
for
several generations because they want backwards compatibility with stuff.
But honestly, yeah, I saw two people that really buy into that. I want to mod my phone sort of thing. It's a bit like a semi-hobbyist kind of thing, I guess. And they loved it. They absolutely loved it.
You can get like a battery pack that makes the phone last for like 3 days without a charge. You can have a projector.
Yeah.
You can do like a 50-inch telly on the wall.
Yeah.
Although that costs £250. But
still pretty cool.
So what I was kind of comparing it to was, the BlackBerry, which is adding a feature that probably is old and you don't need anymore. But then, like, these modern phones, again, Android phones, they're trying to stand out and trying to sell above Samsung, because Samsung doesn't really do anything different. It makes a sexy-looking phone, and it just sells because it's got massive marketing budget.
I remember a time when BlackBerry, I swear, was... I mean, when I was about 17 in college, there were people, almost like an iPhone, people were always talking about BBM, and everyone had a BlackBerry. I'm just trying to work out what happened. I guess they kept putting a keyboard on their phone.
Yeah, well, it was that thing that
the
brief...
The iPhone happened.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It was that brief moment in time where... all their dads had one, and then BlackBerry also sold like the BlackBerry Curve for 80 or 100 quid, and then all the teenagers got them, and you had BBM with a pin. You still have BlackBerry Messenger on this phone.
Sick.
The Android version, but obviously no one.
No one's BBM'd me.
So no, I just wanted to see what your opinion was there, because like phones like this were completely ruined.
I think they're all awful.
By the buttons. Yeah.
Yeah.
Then, the modular design of this phone, but yeah, we'll see. But yeah, no, it just got me to thinking, really. And there's just too many phones.
There's too many phones owned by too many brands that aren't actually owned by the brands.
Yeah, can you put a modular physical keyboard on that phone?
No.
Oh, maybe a trick.
Do they have a keyboard? I can't remember.
Surely.
They have a game pad, so you can like turn it into like a PSP looking thing.
Okay.
What else they got? Oh, the dumbest one that they do for the mods. On a phone that has Google Assistant and you can download an Alexa app, you can buy an Alexa speaker mod. So you have your phone, which has a digital assistant built in because it's a phone, and you clip a speaker to the back, which can only perform Alexa functions. You can't play music from it. And it costs more than like an Echo Dot.
Yeah. You have to talk to your digital assistant
on
the train.
I really, really wanted to try and pretend that I like that idea, but
there's no redeeming fit. It was one of the worst things I've ever tried to use.
Brilliant.
Yeah. Just a brief addendum to that. Just wanted to see if you're aware of the new BlackBerry, which also costs £579.
Wow,
so they sent around a press release or something saying that the key one, the one from last year, had sold like I think it was like 800,000 phones, and that isn't a lot. Like if you're Apple, like someone's getting fired, but for them that's actually quite
it's
a lot.
Bad,
that's
is
quite
it?
A
it's
lot.
It's not a bad business.
Yeah, if they've sort of kept afloat, kept a brand going.
If I owned a company that sold 800,000 phones, I'd be pretty happy.
Yeah.
I'll probably be in Aruba right now.
Yeah. It's weird that you think that they'd like try and still really hone in on that sort of business.
They do. Like consumers are buying that. Like,
security and keyboard are their two big selling points, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
And they always try and sell into the enterprise market. So
Along with Google's Pixels, it does have the most regular security updates of any Android device I've used.
Right.
You get it every month.
Of any Android device, there's an asterisk for that, right? Cause I don't know enough, I guess, but...
Basically, a lot of...
The Virtue's dead, isn't it? So
that's one that I had in mind, dead. Like, but Virtue, yeah, like, you know, old Virtue stuff. But
Many Android phones don't get regular security updates
more
than a year after they've been out.
Yep.
There you go. It's also got a fingerprint sensor in the space bar.
Phones are ringing.
Phones are ringing. They never stop ringing. I don't know how to end this one. Thanks for paying attention to my many devices.
I loved it.
It's coming home.
It is coming home. Yeah, we're all very... Oh, I'm so hot. And also very excited. This room is so hot. And also very excited about England-Belgium tonight. Any predictions?
I've got a prediction, actually.
Yeah, the use of VAR.
Is coming home.
That's more of a statement than a prediction. I predict football will come home.
Yeah, football is in fact coming home.
Following last week's last week's pod about VAR, seen some quite tenuous uses of that in the past week.
Yeah,
we spoke about how it should really confirm or deny a referee's decision, but this time it's being used to. Referees are actually making a decision
based off of VAR.
No, making the correct decision on the field,
right.
Then going and looking at the screen and overturning. Even though they've seen it in slow motion, that they were correct, and then just giving a penalty. I'm thinking of the one against Argentina, the Nigeria penalty.
Yeah.
Oh,
that was not a penalty. Am I thinking of the right one?
I'm just banging to VAR. I think it's been great. I honestly think it's been great.
What, because it's like shaking up the World Cup?
Yeah,
until it screws us over.
It's the Love Island.
It's
going to
screw us over, isn't it?
Yeah.
The Love Island.
It's going to screw us over when we play Senegal.
In the quarterfinals and lose 1-0.
Yeah.
Anyway, thanks for listening. We got to 40 minutes. Good job.
Good job.
And
good job, everyone.
We will be back next week to talk about more things.
We did 40 minutes and only 10 of them were about football coming home. Good tech podcasting.
Easy. Good tech. Thanks for listening, everyone. We'll be back next week. See you then.
Thanks.
UK Tech Weekly Podcast.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Want to join a film club that has real frank discussions talking about films that you actually want to watch?
Well, then look no further, because we are Frank Film Club with me, Maisie Williams. And each week we watch a film and then come together and obsess over it, or sometimes absolutely slate it. Either way, there's always a lot to say. And the films that we pick range all the way from like 90s and noughties classics all the way up to new releases that are coming out every single week. And sometimes we get our listeners to pick for us.
And we all work in the film industry, don't we, ladies?
Indeed.
So we really love to look at specifically how a film was made.
So if this sounds like your bag, then come and have a listen to Frank Film Club. And remember, absolutely everyone is welcome in this club.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.